Another 7 days left in the state legislative session, another 33 days left in the ski season, and in the studio to look at both, I have the president and CEO of Park City Chamber Bureau, Bill Malone. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So let's talk briefly about the ski season. I mean,
yeah.
What's it? I mean, she's saying, 10 to 15% increase as a result of the ICOM pass. Are we seeing that number reflected?
I just learned something here, sitting here about that.
Clear about that. It's the snow too. It's not just Icon Pass. I mean, we're having an amazing winter. You know, right. People that who've come to us and not been for a few years are coming back. So
yeah.
Fine. So it's been a very interesting winter from the standpoint of, if you think back in December, there was a lot of trepidation, you know, a lot of anxiety going into the season with low reservations at that point in time, what it looked like, and now here we are in March, and I think our numbers on a daily occupancy forecast for the month of March, I think we're up 25 of 31 days compared to last year in March. So it's going to be a super March. I think we're going to come close if we don't set a new record in terms of both sales tax and skier days and occupancy during this season.
Again, and I mean, if you were to give credit to that's snow.
Well, yeah, I think snow is always that great piece of it that tips the scale. I mean, you can do great marketing, you can have terrific product, and the fact that people, have great experiences, go home, tell their friends about that, all the news in terms of snow in the West, and it's and I'm hearing it in a lot of places. It's kind of interesting. They're reading articles both in Aspen and Steamboat and Jackson Hole recently about big seasons that they're having in terms of visitation.
Well, that's what I was going to say. I mean, everywhere there's good snow. I mean, Tahoe can't even bear, you know.
Yeah.
They couldn't get on a plane, I guess, and come here if they wanted to, because they got so much snow of their own. But we're seeing that on the East Coast as well.
Yeah.
Of course, the Colorado resorts as well. So where are people coming from?
Well, in terms of our visitation, it's still, you know, number one is New York and L.A., Southern California areas, San Francisco area, even with all that great snow in the Tahoe area. And we always kind of believe that, you know, well, you know, we could only capture that Bay Area guest if there was a low snow year in the Lake Tahoe area. And that's kind of out the window. That thinking is we think it's a great market for us. There's a lot of young people in the tech industry making good money who like this product that we sell from a ski product. And so I think the Bay Area is another strong one for us. It's just kind of all our strengths. We look a lot more in terms of the Boston market, the D.C. market, as big contributors to our visitation as well.
Yeah. So we'll have those skier day counts when?
When Nathan gives them to me. Sometime and it might be late this year because, you know, I mean, there'll be places that'll be open for a long time before they ever have final numbers.
Yeah, I remember skiing a few years ago, July 2nd.
Yeah.
At Snowbird.
Yeah.
So, it could be a while. And again, both Park City and Deer Valley deciding, you know, almost a year ago to close April 7th.
Mm-hmm.
Do you just see that as like lost?
Yeah, well, I'm looking at it from this big picture, holistic, you know, number standpoint. I'm not running a business and have to balance out, you know, the expenditures versus the revenue side on that, which I totally understand. It can be a painful time for the ski resorts in terms of bleeding or giving back the money that they've made during the season in those last few weeks. However, I love those seasons where we go a little bit longer. Looking off into the future, we have Easter Sunday next year is on April 12th. So that kind of works into our wheelhouse of having 2 weeks prior to the Easter, which might be an easier pill to swallow for ski resorts, in terms of looking at that season. So, I totally get that. And, you know, when you look at these passes that are good at all these different places, I'm sure from a company standpoint, they look and go, well, we do have places open that just doesn't so happen to be here. But it's kind of interesting that, you know, we've grown so much in our meeting and convention business over the years that I think it's pretty interesting how we're able to kind of move that needle pretty quickly in the spring. In fact, we have a group coming in on April 10th of about 250 people. It's a global meetings and incentive travel, a conference that's coming with 250 people on April 10th to 13th. And this is immediately after the ski season is over. And here we're going, turning on the volume in terms of meeting business.
They weren't hoping for skiing, though, were they?
No, they weren't. They knew that all along, and we told them that when they booked the business. And to them, it really didn't matter. They're here for, in fact, they're going to be doing a dine around and some other things getting out into the community.
Okay. Also, let's just talk to you a little bit about legislation. You, the Chamber Bureau hires a lobbyist. Anything you've got your eyes on or asking him to?
You know, not a whole lot this year on that. Looking at, in terms of anything as it relates to transient room tax amendments and changes, there's only one out there. I believe it's just really targeted towards Springdale. And it has to do with some spending some of the TRT funds for, I believe it's ambulance service in that area. They have, it's a very small town with a very small tax base on that, but really just the entrance to a national park. So there's some modifications that were very designed specifically for that. Like everybody else, we're watching, the tax modernization and overhaul. And anytime you do anything that big, and it's there's going to be winners and losers. And it seems as though that, you know, listening to Representative Quinn last week when you were interviewing him, I found it interesting that, you know, kind of going into this thing with everybody's in, and then we're going to talk about who's out. It's not the other way around. So that'll be really interesting for business all along. I mean, that's going to impact all types of businesses in the community. That's one that, you know, it's really hard to take a in or out or pro or con view on, because it's just evolving, you know, every day on that. And then, of course, you know, we're watching the 3-2 beer issue in the supermarkets. And that's a rough one, too, because you look at it and you say, OK, the retailers and the big breweries are looking at it going, OK, we want to be able to maintain presence in those store shelves. And then you have your local craft breweries who are looking at it and not. It's kind of interesting when you talk to them. You know, they would actually want a higher alcohol content on it, but they would kind of pose it right now as to say, you know, you're bending the laws for the big breweries. So that'll be interesting to see. And then I read an article today that was talking about the fact that there's some apprehension about that bill as to that could very well lead to, a referendum in the future in terms of some alcohol law changes and going the signature route to get a ballot initiative in the future on that. So that was a very interesting one to follow.
So when you look at your numbers, when you hear about Deer Valley's increase, doesn't sound like there's been any fallout from the law change last year about the 0.05% drinking.
You know, we haven't seen anything on it. I think I've had maybe one or two emails from folks this year, referring to it as a motivation. But I think, this might be have been the year from a snowfall perspective to take people's minds off of the 0.05 and onto much bigger numbers in terms of snowfall.
Okay, real quick, the marketing money that you get, are you still on tap to get that 20-plus million bucks?
For the state, yeah, mm-hmm. We're at 24 million once again, and that's the same as last year. And the formula that was called the TMPF, Tourism Marketing Performance Fund, in the state has expired. So there is no formula that automatically increases it right now. And so it's at the $24 million number. And there may be different appropriations that are added to that at the last minute. But right now it's gone through in the budget at $24 million, which would put us at the same in terms of caps that we can apply for. for additional marketing programs.
Yeah. So, I mean, do you pull back your marketing given that, you know, Mother Nature's kind of done it for you? Or do you just, you go full bore ahead?
We're kind of like, when it comes to winter, our marketing dollars are pretty much front loaded. So, you know, we're out there marketing before the snow falls. So generally, we're kind of out there on the early side. But we're off on our summer marketing now and starting those campaigns.
Okay. Hey, we'll bring you back after the ski season, find out what's happened then.
Great.
With those numbers.
Thank you.
Bill Malone is the president and CEO of Park City Chamber Bureau. Well, the clock is ticking to raise the final funds for the 19-acre Snow Ranch pastures there at the base of Thanes Canyon. On the phone, I have the executive director of Utah Open Lands, Wendy Fisher, who has been working to get this money raised. Good morning, Wendy.
Good morning, Leslie. How's your pledge drive going?
So far, so good. Yeah. Halfway
good.
Through. So how much left do we have to raise on this property for the conservation easement?
$1,470,000.
Oh, yikes.
Yeah. And so Utah Open Lands has about $650,000 in pending grant requests out right now. But that's, you know, still going to leave us short. We're also trying to get funds from some major donors as well, and we're anxiously awaiting all those requests to see what happens.
Well, the deadline coming up at the end of the month, right?
Yeah, and one of the things that we have found, of course, in December when we had the first deadline, I think that the family was really impressed by the progress that had been made. Obviously, the bond passed. And also we had raised a significant amount of money at that time. And with that progress, the family did grant us an extension. So, again, we're in that place of hoping that if we get close and there's significant progress that has been shown, that the family might extend the deadline again. We don't know, although I will say we've had 290 people that have reached into their pockets and contributed to this effort at this point.
Well, people think, I think people think that this was a done deal when Park City voters approved that $3 million, basically half of the amount, when it was part of that $48 million treasure bond. Was that a mistake doing it that way, do you think? I mean, again, there's this no urgency. It was like, oh, we've already bought that.
You know, I think that there are a couple of things that we look at. I mean, you know, hindsight, you're always going to question what, you know, ultimately we did from a decision perspective. But one of the reasons that we felt that it made sense was because we felt that people would definitely support both of these efforts. But I agree with you. We have...
I'm sorry, you're kind of cutting out.
Oh, shoot. I'm sorry.
That's better.
Can you hear me better now, Leslie?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Sorry. So I think that at the end of the day, the reality is that, yeah, there are a lot of people that thought that the bond passage meant that this would be protected and didn't realize that there is an additional $3 million to raise, which is why we're trying to get the word out to folks. We figure that if people can put in as much as $500, if everybody did that, we'd have it done.
As much as how much?
$500.
You're also right now facing the same deadline as we have for the 158-acre Oscarthorpe property. Has that been, do you think, somewhat confusing, knowing that we've got two separate parcels and people just think of it as open space?
You know, I think that people are pretty clear on the two different properties and what they're all about. And obviously, Summit Land Conservancy and Utah Open Lands are doing a good job making sure that if somebody calls or somebody donates, it's going to the right project. I think that what we all realize is open space, you're not making more of it, we're only losing it. And so that's why these efforts are so critical at this time.
So the family's not going to wait forever, though.
No. No, in fact, we were talking about before Bonanza Flats came into view, and we asked the family if they could wait. But, you know, myself are getting any younger, and certainly the family looking for a resolution hopefully a conservation solution to this.
If you don't get the money, then what? They would just go ahead and then subdivide it and sell it off as single-family lots?
You know, I think that is the zoning for third-acre development. So on the 19 acres, the third-acre development would equate to 8 acres because that's how much is in the city limits. What they could do in the county, I don't know. But, you know, obviously they have a conservation ethic. And that's why we're talking to them. That's why we're working to raise money. So, you know, again, our hope is that they don't have to ask that question.
All right. Quickly, Utah Open Lands has also been hired to write the conservation easement for the 1,350-acre Bonanza Flat area. Where are we with that process? I know that you were before the city council this fall, but that never got formally approved. It was kind of a wait and see.
Well, so with every conservation easement, it's unique to the property and it's unique to what the landowner wants to see happen on that property and also the donor intent. As you know, Leslie, there's a huge fundraising campaign. $13 million was raised from different agencies and private individuals. And so we have worked through all of the conservation easement language. At this point, we're getting down to the final details. And then also the management, because there's a lot of mismanagement or lack of management, I guess is a better way to put it, that occurred on Bonanza. And that has the ability to impact watershed values. It has the ability to impact wildlife habitat and also impact the overall recreational experience. So we have been working with the city on some management ideas to really bring it to a higher level of management because they're really creating an outstanding experience. So the management plan is in its final stages, and now we've collected data from this last winter and what was taking place up there. And so we hope that by the end of March, we'll be able to have that before the public, before the city approved.
Okay. I'm going to leave it at there. Wendy, I appreciate your time this morning. Thank you.
Thank you. Good luck with the pledge drive.
That's Wendy Fisher, Executive Director of Utah Open Lands. Again, still $1.47 million to raise. You can find out more by going to utahopenlands.org on that Snow Ranch Pastures property. Hey, well, coming up tomorrow, the 2019 Fly Fishing Film Tour headed to Park City. On the phone with details, I have Chris Barkey. He's with the Utah Stream Access Coalition. Good morning to you, Chris.
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, so what is the Fly Fishing Tour?
Well, every year the film industry, or the fly fishing film industry, people that go out and film shows to be put into various film tours. And this one, there's about 8 different shows that are shown throughout the evening, ranging from Alaska to French Polynesia, Idaho, Florida, South Dakota. I mean, there's all sorts of different films for different tastes, saltwater, freshwater. And it's an event that we put on. I mean, they come to Utah for various shows, but we get to do one of them that we license ourselves as the coalition to try to bring awareness and raise donations from folks and just get them involved in the film, fly fishing film tour, and throw some entertainment their way.
Okay, so it's happening when and where?
Tomorrow night at the Jupiter Bowl up there in Park City at 7 o'clock. Come early, you know, get some dinner. Enjoy some talk, learn about the process of what we're going through to try to open up access to stream beds in Utah and give people more recreation, not less.
So that's what this...
And one thing we wanted to add to you as well is if your next donor to that open land stuff, whether it be to the Oscar Thorpe or the other Bonanza Flats, we'd love to give a pair of tickets to the next donor of that.
Okay. Well, I'm not sure that we can figure that out, but we've got your phone number. We can figure that out. So the cost of a ticket is how much for tomorrow's screening?
I believe it's $12, $15 at the door.
Okay. And how
or
would
$15 in advance or something like that. I'm not sure on the cost. I think it's $15 in advance if you go into, like, Trout Bum 2, your local fly shop, or Fish Heads in Heber.
Okay. So that's the place to show up, or there will be tickets available at the doors, my understanding.
Yeah.
Okay. Hey, Chris, good luck to it, and thanks for your time this morning.
We appreciate it.